goes. Hey, everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless. And this week, well, let me, I'm not going to put this in the post, but my unions blog got quite a bit of, let's say, feedback and conversation going in the Facebook pages. So, which is a good thing, but I just think it's important to understand that a lot of people, you know, they look at unions, and I just find it interesting that people don't, they're one-sided. And by one-sided, mostly the anti-union people are one-sided. Now listen, I'm not saying unions end-all, beat-all, but for crying out loud, I'm just looking for a way to help the tower climber. And it isn't all one-sided. It isn't like it's all for just the climber. So what I was trying to do is just talk about some way to protect the tower climber. And like I said, the anti-union people, they just looked at the auto union. I'm going to be honest with you. That's all anybody looked at. And I get it. I get it. It really was detrimental to the auto industry. However, you can't look at the union and blame them for everything. You know, the managers at GM back then, remember, the management was completely separated. They really didn't run the company like, say like a tower company. You know, a tower company, in most cases, not always, but, you know, you have a lot of small tower companies out there. And I think the unions are really scared that they couldn't afford a union. But I think with the tower companies, the owner is very active in the day-to-day operations. You know what I mean? I have a lot of guys I email, I conference, and, you know, talk to electronically, let's say, about the way they run their business. And they're very involved in what the front line is doing. And I consider the front line the tower climber. Then you have, you know, the middle, the guys at feedback, say project managers, foremen, crew chiefs, whatever you want to call them, boss, you know, foreman, whatever. And then you have the owner. Sometimes the owner is the, you know, right out there with the guys. But my point is, when you have owners like that, they're very involved in the day-to-day business. When you look at the auto industry, management became very separated from the worker. Whether you blame the union or management doesn't matter. The point is, you're looking at the auto worker industry. And one thing I like to look at is the other unions. And like I said, the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, which are the electricians and communication workers, anyone who pretty much does wiring, professional wiring for a business, maybe a house, but mostly businesses. Those guys, I see a lot of good things in that union. So I can't draw a black and white line between what you call good and bad. I have to look at every detail. And you know what? I think that's a problem with the tower industry. Whether you like it or not, all you guys out there, a lot of people look at the tower industry, and it was rated as one of the worst industries, especially tower climbers, the worst industry to get into by these young people. I know they have a lot of classes for it and everything, and it does become a passion with a lot of people. My point is, if you were to judge everything by the accidents we had the past 2 years, you would never get in tower climbing. Am I right? So where's the new talent going to come from? It's not just tower climbing. Let me tell you something. Back when I ran the engineering department of a company, which I'm not going to name, but we had trouble finding talent. We combed the schools. Nobody really wanted to do RF work. We wanted RF engineers. We were looking at computer. Everyone wants to do computer work. I'm not going to lie to you. Computer engineers were easy to find, but no one wanted to do RF work. Just no one had any interest. You know why? Because when you look on the web, there's so many people that say RF is bad for you. And it's not like you're going to be radiating your head every day. It's one of those things that if you look in general, it looks crazy to get into. But yet if you have a passion for it, and I'm going to bring up the hamsters. You know, I know they're amateurs, but they have a passion for their radio work. They have a passion for improving the radio, improving the antenna, and so on. A lot of RF engineers, a lot of tower climbers, and even a lot of like rope access guys, they have a passion for making things better. So the job becomes more than a job, and it becomes something that is just fun to do. It's not for everybody. I'm not going to lie to you. It's for a select few. And I think with the tower climbers, you know, they devalued it so much. I don't blame the climbers, but a lot of these businesses just hired anybody saying, oh, look, you get to travel, you get commission. You get per diem and you get a lot of your bills paid. That's very attractive to a young man that's looking for a job, you know, but the reality is it's a tough job. It takes skills. It takes talent. And a lot of people that are in it for a while understand that you have to have different skills for different things. Some guys are better at doing the job. Some guys are better at managing. Some guys are better at leading. Some guys are better at training. Those are all aspects of this job. And for instance, right now I'm in business development, but before that, you know, I was a manager. I did regional engineering. I did a lot of different jobs. So I think when I look at how to unionize tower climbers, the tower climbers need to organize somehow to protect themselves, whether you like it or not. And you know what? There's a lot of good companies out there. I admit that. There's a lot of really, really good companies. By the same token, there's a lot of really, really bad companies out there. There's just a lot of scum buckets that run companies. That's the way it is. Why it's that way, I don't know, but it is. All you people out there can deny it, but all you guys that work for a good company, get down on your knees, put your hands together, and pray to God and say, thank you. Thank you for giving me such a great company to work for. Now, with that said, you know, not every job's perfect. We all bitch, okay? We all have things about the job we don't like, right? We all complain. It's work. You know, they don't call it play every day, although to some of you, it seems like play when you do some of the job. Some of you guys that like to climb, you probably hate the paperwork. Some of you guys probably like the RF side. Some of you guys probably like the steel side. Some of you guys, like me, like to go up on a sunny day. A lot of you guys, and I give you guys credit, like to go up on these cold, wintry days. I don't know how you do it. Well, I mean, I did it for 12 years, you know, through all the seasons. But you know what? You adapt, you adjust, you improvise, you adapt, you overcome. That's what you do. I mean, that has been the creed for tower climbers for years and years. So when I say I'm looking for a way to protect the climber, I am, because it's not necessarily from the job and the safety aspect, but we need to set a standard for safety, for certifications, for training, which TIRAP is doing, for apprenticeship, for entry into this profession. And it is a professional. It is a profession. You are professionals, gentlemen and ladies and gentlemen. You are professionals. It's not a grunt job. You got to know more than just be able to climb up a tower and not be afraid of heights. You have to know what you're doing. And that's where the problem came in. A lot of these companies hired people that just would go up a tower and put a bolt together. It's more than that. Need to understand rigging. You need to understand rope work. And just today, I was on a Facebook group where people are like, well, why do you need rope access? If you're good at what you do and you're rigging a lot of equipment, rope access is a great asset, okay? It could be valuable asset to your job. As far as Spratt and IRADA, those are two organizations I highly admire and I highly respect. So when I say about the unions, the only reason I brought it up is because I think the tower workers need to be represented. And all I ask, if you say the union's not the way to go, what would you suggest? One guy said a Facebook group. Well, we're doing that. Someone else said policing the industry. Aren't we doing that now? I mean, aren't we really? We have Nate, you know, we have TIRAP, we have the Department of Labor. Aren't we doing that now? Let me ask you something. When you say you're policing the industry, are you going to go back to those 11 families that lost a loved one and say, well, we're policing the industry? Think about it. I mean, really, are you proud of that? Are you going to go to those families and look them in the face and say, this is as good as it gets because we're policing the industry? I don't think so. I think we need some type of organization. I know a lot of you tower crew owners don't want to hear this, but you know, the positives go in both ways. For one, if you had a hall with a list of tower climbers in it, or even a list, and someone did present that, we could come up with a list or a group where we could track certifications and things like that. But anyway, for the companies, it would be good because they wouldn't have to track certifications. But when someone quits, they don't track it anymore. Done, gone. You know, they don't care. If a competitor calls and say, hey, did John Doe have this certification? You could say yes or no. You could lie. You could tell the truth. I mean, how would they know? You have no obligation to tell them anything, right? I mean, if you like the guy, if you didn't like the guy, what kind of terms did he leave on? You know, it could, you know, just not be pretty. So my point is, they also need some way to get paid. That is one of the top complaints, if not the top complaint, over safety. Everyone's concerned about safety. It's something we can track, and it's something everyone is very open with. Getting paid is not very open because no one likes to talk about it, and no one likes to share their books. That's my point with that union thing. I want to see the workers get paid for the work they do. I don't want to see workers abandoned at some site. With that said, if you're a company and you ever had workers just leave crap at a hotel and leave on you, there are two things you should ask. One, why did they do that? They must be pretty pissed off at you as a company. Two, did you pay them or is there another reason? Are you making the work environment so crappy that they had to leave? These are all things you can get angry. You can get mad because you got to drive 1,100 miles to get your stuff, you know, in a hotel room somewhere if it's still there. You know, who knows if it's at a tower site, if it's hanging, you know, 300 foot up in the tower because they just got pissed off and they rigged it up there. So that was my point with that. You know, it goes two ways. The other thing is a company, you could draw from the local union hall. And if you're not happy with someone, you can send them back to the hall and get a new guy. It's not all one sided. And a lot of people don't want to take the time to learn about it. This is learning something new. So, all right, I'm done with my rant. So let's talk about change orders. So how do you get paid for change orders? Here's the thing. A lot of people in the industry do extra work, especially tower crews. And you know what? They get beat up a lot by project managers, by foremen, by customers. And they may or may not get paid for their change orders. So the key is planning. You need to plan ahead. What do I mean by that? If you're a tower crew owner and you review the scope of work, or if you're an estimator or bidder, you need to be sure that you understand what your job is going to be going into the job. And by this, I mean the scope of work. When you submit a bid or read the RFP, you may or may not submit a scope of work. But before you start working, chances are you will either write your scope of work or you will review the customer's scope of work and you will come to an agreement on that scope of work. Terms and conditions may be in the scope of work, maybe a separate document, okay? Terms and conditions are important because that's how you get paid as far as net 30, net 60, net 90. Conditions could have a lot of things, whether you're responsible for everything or whether you're just responsible for your little part, very important. So what you're going to want to do is read the SAL, scope of work, SAL. You're going to read the SAL, modify it to match your assumptions, exclusions by assumptions. What do you expect when you start the job? What assumptions do you have for the customer by exclusions? If you're a tower crew and they want you to carry stuff into the shelter and that's not your job, I'm just throwing this out there. It might be your job, but let's say in this case it isn't. You want to make sure that's an exclusion. You want to make sure that if you show up and put everything up, let's say you're doing a dish alignment. You want to make sure that when you're finished with that, someone is there to help you align the dish and test it for throughput. So that day you're finished, the link is up, both sides are up, you test throughput, you get paid. But I don't mean you get paid that day, but let's say you get paid according to the terms, net 30, net 60, net 90, whatever you sign up for. So you got to plan ahead. You really do. Now, let's get into the change order. I talked about the scope of work, but let's say that the customer, something comes up. You got to go 20 foot higher in the tower. I'm just going to do something very simple. So you got to go 20 foot higher. Now, is that a 4-hour job? Can you do it within the confines of the hours you bid? Or is it going to add 20 hours of work? Remember, if you have four people, 5 extra hours is 20 hours. That's 20 hours that you didn't put into the job. It's going to cut into your mark. Might be another night, you know, 5 more hours. You may have had, let's say 24 hours, which is 3 days, 3 work days, assuming 8-hour days. I know all you guys work more than 8 hours, okay? But let's just say it's another night stay. So you got to stay one more night. There you have a lot of expenses. You got hours. A guy's got to get paid. It's eating into your margin. So are you going to do it? Well, you know what? In the scope of work, there's a couple things you got to take into consideration here. First, how good's a customer? If this is a customer that's a partner that hires you regularly, You may want to do it. Brownie points go a long way, and I'm all for that. I've done that for a lot of customers. I've helped out a lot of customers as much as I can. If you go the extra mile, they really appreciate it. It's a big deal. Big deal. So you really have to know going in what kind of customer this is. If they ask you for an additional 4-hour task, are you going to do it? Now, let's go beyond that. Let's say this is a customer that always gives work to the lowest bidder and there's no loyalty. If they don't give you loyalty, are you going to give them loyalty? You may, the first time you work for them, say, oh, I'll do this. Well, next time it goes to the lowest bidder, goes to the lowest bidder, goes to the lowest bidder. You don't, whether you do or don't get to work, you're not making a lot of money on the job, right? Because you're cutting into margin to be the lowest bidder. So what do? I'm going to tell you. You're going to define that change order process. If it always goes to the lowest bidder, there is no incentive to do anything extra for the customer. There isn't. If they're going to go with you, that's great. But I've been lied to with a lot of customers. Yeah, we'll go with you. We'll go with you next time, lowest bidder. And you know what? You just don't work for that customer. Remember, we all like the work. And if we're really, really slow, we'll do work at low margin just to pay the guys. I get it. I'm with that. But listen, you got to put the business first at some point. So if you're going to lose money on the job all the time because they ask for a lot of change orders or they ask for a lot of extra work, and I've had customers like that. You get on the tower and they say, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do this? Can you do that? And next thing you know, you're moving like 8 antennas up there and you're doing a dish realignment. Next thing you know, you didn't get to the work that was in the sow to begin with. The sow is very important. That's how you get paid, okay? So the other thing is, sometimes you got to tell the customer no. Whether you like it or not, you just got to say no. So you got to put the change order process in the sow. It has to be defined. I would recommend that you understand the change order process going in. If it's not in the sow, the customer should have a process. And who can authorize that? Who can authorize the change in work? If someone tells you to do something, you know, you don't have to take a verbal. If you're on good terms with a customer, a verbal might be good enough, right? If it's a new customer, you want at least an email. If you can get a PO, great. If they can come up with another scope of work, or if they just say, hey, hang this dish at 80 foot and align it, I'm down with that. That's simple stuff. You can complete it. The link's up. Just make sure you have something other than verbal. Verbal's great, if you have a good relationship with a customer. But if it's a new customer, someone that you just don't know very well, or if it's a customer you know is shady that screwed you in the past, at least get an email, preferably a PO. In the email, it'd be great if they sent you a PO with a not to exceed limit. That's how most of these guys work. And I get it. Just make sure it's a good limit, okay? So now, some customers do ask for a lot. However, I know a lot of contractors, I see this in construction and in tower work, that their business plan is to go in cheap with minimal margin, and then they ask for change order after change order after change order after change order. They don't do anything out of scope. Hey, that's fine with some customers, right? But what's going to happen is customers get sick of that, and pretty soon you're off the bidding list, and you're wondering why they don't respond to any of your responses, or why you don't get the bids anymore, the RFPs. So if that happens, you know why. You got to change your ways. But a lot of guys like to make the money up in change orders. Customers get sick of that real quick. So then, define the change order. When you get the change order, make sure the notes are in there. Make sure you know how you're going to get paid. If you trust customer for a verbal, that's great. So ask them for an email. That's what I would recommend. Again, you want an email or you want a PO so you have some proof that they authorized the work. If they want a paper document, then make sure that you have authorization. Actually, if you want a paper document. But just make sure that they authorized the work. Make sure there's a name on there. That's why I like an email. You have an email address, someone you can work with. So someone's going to have the power of authorization. It's something that you're going to want to get done while you're on the site or the next day, whatever. But you're going to want someone at your company to have it, right? It is a great idea to understand the process. It really is. The change order process. That's what I'm talking about here. So you want to make sure that you understand the change order process. That's very important. No matter what type of work you're doing, each customer may have a different process. If your company has a specific process, it's good to know that, but chances are you'll buckle to do what the customer wants you to do. I hate to say that, but you just do. I mean, what are they going to do? They going to follow your process? You going to tell Verizon Wireless how you want change orders done? All they need to know is that you need a PO or an email. You know, that's all they need to know. Everything else is their process, okay? So when the work is completed for your scope or your change order or anything, how will it be inspected? You need to determine how to get paid. If you are installing something, then you may not get paid until the unit is tested and operational. If you're turning up a point-to-point link, that's easy. Link's up, it's tested, send a bill. If it's a cell site, you have to wait until they integrate and test it. Maybe that's what you get paid for. That may be a week or in 3 months, depending on the rollout. So I would define a time limit, even if it's a change order, because you want to get paid for any of this work as soon as possible, right? At least according to your T&Cs. If it's beefing up the tower, you may need a closeout package. And what do I mean by a closeout package if you don't know this by now? I mean, a lot of pictures, a lot of documentation. That's what I mean by that. So, you're going to have to remember the original T&Cs apply, the terms and conditions. That's something you may have to know about. Being in the field, you may not. You know, the billing people need to know that, but it is nice to know if you're going to get paid net 30, net 60, or net 90. So, but make sure that when you write the SAL, you include a change order process. If it's the customers or you have to refer to another document, hey, I'm down with that. That's good. So just make sure you understand it. So again, just to sum it up, make sure that you understand the change order process for your customer, for your company, and from the customer. Remember, payment is what keeps you in business. You should get paid for the work that you do, and you should get paid for the additional work you do. In other words, if you spend 20 extra hours at a site, unless you're helping the customer out as a favor and it's a good customer, you should get paid for it. And you might be getting paid anyway in margin. So remember, time is money. Change orders take time and you should get paid for them. Be smart, be safe, pay attention. Make a plan, follow the plan, improve the plan, and you should do fine. And hey, let me know what to do next. I got some feedback in there, getting a blog. Let me know. I need to know what to do next. You know, I write a lot of this stuff because this is stuff I run into in the field. This is stuff I often see in the field. And this is feedback I get from the field. One thing I learned when I was a manager is that all the best ideas come from the front line. You tower climbers are on the front line. You got to give your ideas back. Don't, you know, you just got to be open and honest and come up with a way to improve it. And when I say you give your ideas, you can't just sit there and bitch and cry and moan about all your problems. You have to come up with constructive ideas that will solve the problems. That's what you want to do. Okay. So, hey, finally, thank God for the Hubble Foundation. Christmas is coming up, and if you can give to the Hubble Foundation, click on the picture I have in there where it says, "We support the Hubble Foundation," Isaiah 1:17. That is so important because the Hubble Foundation is helping those families of climbers that have had accidents, climbers that get stuck. You'll find that Jet and Kathy go the extra mile. Jet has lost her husband. Kathy has lost a son. Two of the most painful things in your life that you can imagine is losing a dearly loved one. So the Hubble Foundation is out to help these families, and it's run by very passionate people. They're raising money to help your brethren families. You understand the brothers that in the field, brothers and sisters, sorry, once again, I'm showing I'm a little chauvinistic, but the brothers and sisters out in the field, they're trying to help the families of those people. I know we're all busy. I hope you get time off for the holidays. I really do, and I think you will with a lot of the slowdowns. But listen, unless you're working Sprint, Sprint's still ramping up. But I think AT&T slowed down a little bit, and I think so did Verizon. But listen, the Hubble Foundation is there to help. They really are. You got to do what you can for them, okay? So one other thing, if you're on iTunes, if you're on Stitcher, leave me a review. Let me know what you think. I really need some feedback. I do. I just need some feedback. Anything you can give me. And again, I got all my products out there. I came up with that scope of work tutorial, which, hey, I'm here to help. I'm trying to help you guys. I know it ain't cheap, but I got some discounts out there in the website. Make sure you take advantage of it. I got my book, The Field Worker's Aid for Tower Site Work, which does have a lot of links in it. That's some feedback I got, good and bad. People seem to really like it, but it's there to help you. And as far as my tower climbing, an introduction for all you new climbers out there or wannabes or greenhorns, it's there to help, and I came up with an audio version. Now, I did all the chapters separate because I thought it would help you guys when you're on the move, when you're driving, you could at least listen. And I was sort of hoping if you listen to the podcast, you might like that. You know what I mean? So, all right. Everyone, we're coming up on the holidays. I hope things are slowing down for you, and I hope you get a break. I really do, guys. Just remember, over these holidays, remember the fallen climbers out there. We had 11 this year. We had a lot of near misses this year. All I can ask is that you pray for these people. And the other thing I can ask is that you look out for yourselves and your coworkers, your workmates. Those are the guys. Those are your family in the field. Those are the people that are working and risking their lives along with you. Those are the people that you depend on to help you make sure that you get home safe at night. But you have the same responsibility to make sure that they get home safe at night. All right? Be smart, be safe, pay attention. Take care, everyone.